Hey guys, this is Brian.
Johnny.
And just a quick note about this week's episode. We were trying something new with our setup, and we have a very special guest who called in to the show. So there's a few minor bleeps and blurps and
yeah.
So we apologize in advance.
As our friends at Night of the Living podcast call it, robots.
Robots. Anyway, so yeah, we apologize and enjoy this episode.
Yep.
Thanks. All right, welcome back to take two of episode 60 of the Infamous Podcast.
Like you forgot where you were.
I'm Brian.
Johnny's here.
And on the phone,
David Griffin's also here.
David Griffin in the house, people. Vlogger extraordinaire, star of all of Collider TV on YouTube. What else are you doing these days?
Yeah, you can find me there. You can find some of my writings on Screen Rant. That's you know, I'll probably be covering some shows this fall, so you can look for me over there as well.
Social media maven, as you've triumphantly returned.
I'm on the Instagram. I'm on the Twitter. Yeah, you can find me on. You can find me on Twitter at GriffinDE. So yeah, I'm out there.
Yeah, look at you getting the plugs in early. They've taught you well at Collider. They have taught you well. Anyway,
you can find me everywhere. At work, usually.
At work, usually. All right. So this is episode 60. And today we're recording on September the 8th, which is the 50th anniversary of the original Star Trek series, or Star Trek, the original series, if you will. And if you want to know our thoughts on that one, go listen to episode 59 and come right back. Because this week we're going to talk about The Next Generation.
Yeah.
Woohoo! But before we get into that, normally we do some news bites at the beginning of the episode, and I'm going to be honest, I didn't really find anything that like was blowing my skirt up news-wise this week that I wanted to talk about, but
I'm
Johnny...
stirred by the blowing, the skirt up picture just went through my head really fast, and I
know,
like,
me too.
I can see
Brian, like, you know, like on the grate, you know, with the white dress and everything.
Worst thing is you weren't here to see the hand movement like he was blowing his skirt up.
Oh wow.
So, well, you know, you do what you gotta do. But anyway, so instead of that, we're gonna do a new segment. It's called Certified Infamous Reading List, and part of the reason for this is last week, Johnny, when he came over, he brought along the Image Skybound Volume 1 of Manifest Destiny by Chris Dingus?
I think it's Dingus.
What a horrible last name. Diogenes. Chris Diogenes. Let's just call him Chris Diogenes. Matthew Roberts and Owen Genie.
It's Dingus. It's got to be Dingus.
Anyway, and if you're curious, Volume 1, Flora and Flana, is available digital and at your local comic book shop. But what this book is about, which is what makes it awesome and what I fell in love with it for, is it's about the Louisiana Purchase.
Yeah.
And the adventures of Lewis and Clark, which
I'm
a huge, like the Revolution is one of my all-time favorite parts of American history, but the Louisiana Purchase is one of like those things that I just gravitated to as a kid. Lewis and Clark stuff in particular.
The real history is a true adventure.
Right.
I mean, it is a true adventure. I mean, and, you know, there's been documentaries and all that of it, you know.
Don't forget about that excellent PC game that came out when we were kids.
Yeah.
I love that video game, Adventures of Lewis and Clark, I think, or Lewis and Clark, sorry.
And then there was also, remember Oregon Trail?
Oh, yeah, Oregon Trail.
I always had a Lewis and a Clark in my party.
Nice.
So this is great because it's the 1804 Adventures of Lewis and Clark.
Yeah.
Monster Hunters.
It's literally... they've tied the real history into it for the fact that the Louisiana Purchase happens, except when it happens, the French warns the United States government there be monsters across the river. And from there, it's, you know, Lewis and Clark cataloging what's happening and what's really happening.
Right.
Literally, there's a part in there that's cool, and it's not a spoiler. Lewis is writing the diary journal of the adventure, and he's writing two books. One that's going to be the book that's released, and the other book that's going to be put in Area 51 when they get there.
Yeah, there's the real adventures, and then there's you know,
yeah,
the
yeah.
This is suitable for public consumption.
This is what they're going to release as a book,
right?
Type thing. So yeah, it's fun, and they encounter some pretty beastly creatures in this first volume.
Yeah. So you pointed out very succinctly that there's a point in this book, and Dave, when you get to it, because you're going to read it and you're going to love it.
Oh, I already found it on my Comixology. I'm going to definitely read it.
So when you get to it, you understand. Johnny said, you're going to get to a point and you're going to understand why Skydown bought this
book. Literally, like, I read it and I'm like, holy crap, there's something in there where I told Brian, I said, when you get to this certain part, I said, and I'm not going to spoil it, I said, but there's a reason why Skybound bought this book.
Yeah. And, oh, yeah, there definitely is.
Yeah. Great art. I mean, it's really good art. It's reminiscent of Tony Moore.
Yeah. Like, definitely, like, his work on Agent Venom.
Yeah.
Like, of late with Marvel.
Right.
But yeah, the art is beautiful. It's got that painted quality, but, like, the coloring is great. But at the end of the day, what makes it cool is you have this band of misfits.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because, like, Lewis and Clark have selected essentially people with no families.
Right.
They have folks that are with them that are criminals. They have folks with them that are soldiers.
Right.
And, you know, they're just running with it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I think that, like, I don't know in the real history, but I think that all the men that went on that did not have wives.
Yeah.
At the time, you know, parents and that, because I do, I have like a CD of Kim Burns' documentary.
Yeah.
And like there's journal entries that are read throughout the music that's played. And one of them's one of the younger men talking about when they get back to St. Louis, he's talking about, we can all go home and see our parents.
Right, right.
And it's like, you know, But the cool thing is, I think that they'll tie, when this book's close to ending, they'll tie Lewis's suicide into it.
Yeah.
Because he did eventually commit suicide. So, you know, it would make sense that, you know, because of what they encounter, that something will cause him to commit suicide.
Yep.
And that'll be the end of the book. That would be a good ending to the book.
Yeah, that'd be a great ending. So, I mean, definitely check this book out. We've definitely dubbed it Certified Infamous, which we're resurrecting that hashtag.
Yeah.
But yeah. All right. So, Dave, you going to check it out?
I am going to check it out.
Have we enticed you enough to get the book and
you guys sold me on it? And Brian, if I may, I know you're doing like this. It's just going to be every week. Pick of the week.
No, we're going to kind of like, it's, you know, sometimes we'll do news, sometimes it'll be this. I have another idea that I need to run by Johnny at some point in the near future. But
well, if you want my opinion, even though this is not my podcast, I think it's a great idea.
Yeah,
great idea. Yeah.
Cool. All
right. There'll be more to come.
Yeah, definitely, because there's so much good stuff out there right now. And there's so much crap out there right now, and we want to make sure the cream rises to the top.
Yeah.
So, not to get all cliche there. All right. Let's talk about some Star Trek. All right. So,
Brian's here flailing his arms and papers in his hands.
Last week, Johnny gave me about 9 episodes to watch, of which I watched.
Of the original series. Yeah.
Of which I watched 3.
Was it 27 this time?
So it was like 22.
I gave you a full season to watch.
Essentially, you did. And I watched more than... I didn't watch everything on your list, but I watched more episodes than what you had suggested.
Tudor.
Because I was just like... I don't know. This show whole... it, like, I was shocked at how well this held up.
Yeah.
You know? Dave, and I know you're going back and doing the movies and that kind of stuff, and you watched Farpoint Station this morning.
Yeah, you guys inspired me because of your rewatch. I want to do a rewatch. Now I'm going in chronological order. So, like, right now I am on Insurrection.
Yeah.
So I've been moving over the last 2 weeks. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun, and it was fun, like you said, Brian, going back and checking out Next Generation. And yeah, even the pilot, that was 1987. It still looks really good. It's very impressive.
Let's get ages. How old were you in 1987, David?
I was 3 years old. So Ryan, I didn't start watching it with...
You were 10?
Okay. Oh, you're 10, so, okay.
I was.
Yeah, so I didn't really get into it till later on, till probably seasons like 6 and 7, when my dad would watch it, and I would watch it with him. So it wasn't until I was like, you know, 8 or 9 years old that I actually remember watching it, but it still looks good. Yeah.
So, and so since we're talking about like the pilot in season one
up
front. Like, I promised I'd share this story last week. When I was a kid, this was the first show where I did not want to miss an episode, right?
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so episodes 1 through 9, Friday night, right there on Fox 19, watching, you know, slack-jawed, like, in love with Deanna Troi, loving what was happening. And then come week 9, week 10, whatever it was, we were going to visit my uncle in Detroit. And we were leaving after school and driving on Friday night. And it's like, we better be in Detroit by 8 o'clock. And we weren't. And like, I had like a 10-year-old nerdy meltdown. And,
but it was the syndication, so
it was.
It
and so
not
I was
been playing at the same time in Detroit.
And but it was. That was the problem.
Oh really?
And so we missed it.
Yeah. Nothing.
Anyway, so we missed it, and it was like crap. And so I had this meltdown, and like, I've never been forgiven by my family for being such a nerd.
Right.
That I loved Star Trek: The Next Generation so much. But yeah, and so going back and watching those first, you know, few episodes and stuff, watching the pilot and some of the stuff, I like really got back into it. And
yeah,
I walked around with my tablet for this entire week just slack with
jawed.
Netflix going on.
He was back to being a 10-year-old
I totally
kid,
was. And like, I'm so happy at how well this held up. Because I was really worried about watching this one.
Right.
Now, I've made it no secret. Deep Space Nine is my favorite Star Trek series.
Yeah.
This is the series that like got me really, really hooked on the franchise.
Okay.
Like, I have my communicator button pin that sits on my wall. I remember getting the action figures, and it was just, I don't know, man. I'm really happy we did this.
Okay.
Like, with the original series, I was kind of like, I recognized
you can tell.
I mean, I totally with the original, I recognized the groundbreaking nature of the show.
Yeah.
That being said, I don't like it does hold up.
Right.
But like, this was like, especially once Ronald D. Moore showed up.
This is what they would you consider your generation.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. So it's like David Tennant or Chris Eccleston is really my
doctor. Right. Yeah.
So
yeah, I
know.
Can't say that this is, you know, even though I'm just a couple years older than you,
right?
This isn't my generation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because I watched the original like a lot as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, then I was into the movies and that, but it was one of those things where, oh yeah, I know everything. I know this universe.
Right.
And that. So it's like, you know, but it was one of those things where it's not my generation, but I can call it my Star Trek because I seen it aired like
live.
First run and that, and it wasn't watching it in reruns.
I don't know, Dave, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I'm similar. I know I'm a little bit a few years younger, but still, I mean, even though I got into it probably more in the early 90s, I still watched, you know, all the syndication episodes with my dad, and then I did a rewatch. I think I want to say it was back in summer of 2012 when Netflix put it out there, you know, and I think I did a rewatch about 3-4 years ago, I guess now, and, you know, watched it all over again, and it's just it still holds up. I mean, there's some bad episodes. I mean, you know, when you're going like 25, 26 episodes a season, there's going to be some duds, but I mean, once, and I'm sure we're going to get into this later, but once we get to season 3 and Ronald D. Moore, you know, from Battlestar Galactica and Outlander comes in and starts writing, especially all the Klingon-centered episodes, it gets really
like
good.
Season 3
really good.
Is where everybody came in because it was right after the writer's strike. They were looking for new people because season 2 is just a minefield of writer's strike episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it wasn't season 2 like when Gates McFadden left, the doctor left.
Yeah,
it was a different doctor
lady for a while.
But
McFadden was still in
they
the credits.
No, she wasn't. She
was
her
in a few of the episodes. Like when she wasn't in there with that blonde doctor lady in season 2, it said Gates McFadden as Beverly Crusher. Because I was
Diana Muldaur.
Yeah.
Yeah, she had been a guest on 2 episodes of the original series.
And she was fine. Mm-hmm.
And Gene was the one that brought her in. I mean, if you I think I told you about the documentary, David, Chaos on the Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Just watch that documentary. It talks about the first 2 seasons and how they weren't as good as people thought they were.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
of the what was going on behind the scenes and that. It was just a war between Roddenberry and the studio, pretty much.
Speaking I guess the good thing is it's thankful that the ratings were so high that we got, you know, obviously five more seasons after that. So, yeah. I mean, I guess thankfully it wasn't so bad. No, Johnny, can you watch that? Is it like on Netflix now or where can I watch that?
I don't know if it's still on Netflix, it was on Netflix.
Okay.
But
all right, cool. No,
you
got to
keep in mind too is like this is coming off of Star Trek IV.
Yeah,
like
literally like, the 20th anniversary was the year before this premiere.
I mean, Star Trek was at its like creative high at that point with IV coming out and being so awesome. Only for us to be just sorely let down.
I mean, the first season is good for what it is. Yeah. There's a lot of episodes in there that are just. Mm-hmm. Like really good episodes. I mean, The Big Goodbye is like one of the best Star Trek: The Next Generation episodes. You know, what hurt them, I think, at the beginning was you had Encounter at Farpoint, which was a good premiere.
It was,
and then the next episode was just a remake of an original series episode, and it just didn't fit well with people who were like wanting to see new material and that. But you know, bringing Q back in the first season for an episode and letting him tempt Riker was I think a helpful thing, and then The Big Goodbye sold the show, I think, because it was a holodeck show. They had introduced the holodeck, but they hadn't shown what they could do with that as a story element, and to do that episode was like the thing that made people go, oh, this is actually going to be something different. And then by the end of the season you have Denise Crosby deciding to leave and them killing a main character, which had never happened on Star Trek before.
And so, you know, she's an interesting one because Tasha Yar was a huge character.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, she was really important, not just to the show, but to Picard in general. And to lose her like that, kind of in that meaningless way.
Right.
As a fan, it kind of first feels like a slap in the face. But then when you, like, sit and you look and you think about it, it's like, all right, that's awesome that they did that. Unfortunately, the one thing that really stood out to me when she died when I was a kid versus now is that blood splotch on her cheek. It just was like hot pink, like nail polish or something. It just was like, that couldn't have
been. The thing with that episode was like, you know, for it to just happen the way it happened and like, you just know, they had to keep going on with the story. Yeah. It's like, that's life.
Yeah.
That's literally, you know, that's life.
And well, wonder, like, you're talking about season one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you wonder the actress. I mean, because obviously, once you get older, you learn the backstory, and I mean, she wanted out.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, which is so sad because I'm sure at that point, you know, hindsight is 2020. She's probably like, this show's not going to do anything and whatever. I don't like my character, but she missed out on 6 other seasons, syndication money, and movie money.
Yeah,
like they probably wouldn't have killed it. That show wasn't known for killing people off. I mean, they probably would have had her through the whole run. I mean, she missed out on a lot. I mean, I think I saw her. She's in Ray Donovan right now on Showtime. That's the only thing I've seen her in recently.
Yeah.
But I mean, she missed out on so much. Like, that's a lot of money she missed out on by leaving the show.
She's done 2 documentaries about Star Trek fans.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. She actually, like, you know, directed. Worked on them. And then she's come back. Obviously, she came back in a season 3 episode.
Sure.
And then came back as her daughter.
Right.
So, you know, it was just the thing that I understand her feelings of just standing on the bridge going, hailing frequencies open. It was the same thing that Nichelle Nichols felt.
Right.
Except she didn't have somebody there to go, wait a minute, think about what you're doing. And it was all like a money game. And, you know, they talk a little bit about that in that documentary, which it is on Netflix. I just checked.
Oh, cool.
Oh, nice. Awesome.
They talk a little bit about that. But like, I mean, she talks about it in a lot of different interviews now where you're like, okay, you know, it's just one of those things where you can understand.
Right.
Sure.
That she just felt like she was just there to be there.
Right.
And I think if she would have stayed around, we wouldn't have got a lot of the Worf stories we got.
Probably not.
And would have went in a different direction with that, with her storyline and with the character.
I don't think we would have got as much Worf. I think they would have probably tried to feminize her more, and we wouldn't have gotten as much like Deanna and Beverly going out in the field.
More of Data and her fully functional thing. You know, that would have been more of a storyline, I think. You know, I'd be curious to see if there was anything that was planned for that. I don't think that anything's ever come out about that. I mean, obviously Gene's gone, and Rick Berman probably would never say anything about anything that was planned and all that. But I mean, I think in the long run, her dying was a benefit to the show.
Yeah, I agree.
Because her coming back made the show funner in some ways because it was the ridiculousness of Star Trek The Next Generation.
Especially when she showed up in the All Good Things in the finale.
Yeah.
And her, like, she had kind of some William Shatner syndrome going on there where her wig was different in every single scene.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was crazy.
We should also talk about that. That's one of like the better series finales of any show.
Oh, yeah.
That is an excellent finale.
So
those two part.
That should have been the movie that came out instead of Generations.
Absolutely should have been the movie that came out. So my favorite like ship, right?
Yeah.
Just look and feel is the NX-01 from Enterprise.
Right.
For some reason I love it, right? But I don't think there's any ship they've ever created in Star Trek that is as beautiful as the Enterprise D.
Yeah.
And especially in the All Good Things with the third nacelle.
Oh yeah, yeah. Like,
but
that's like, one of my favorite designs is like that third nacelle and the phaser cannon on the bottom.
Yeah, the cannon.
It's like, okay.
Like, but no, like the ship is just the lines of it, like, you know, and it's not just the exterior of the ship. It's my favorite bridge.
Right.
It's the most like welcoming and inviting, and
which
you
version?
Feel like just the original, like, you know, the mahogany wood.
Between like season one and season two and season three, they literally redesigned the
probably
bridge.
Probably the season three bridge.
Yeah,
like, you know, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
but
even
the look of it, like on camera, looked great because it wasn't CG.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, it was a model. I think sometimes when you see CG ships, like some of them can look cool, but they still feel you know, computer generated, like because they use models, just like in the original Star Wars films. It looked great. Even just watching this, you know, I just watched the pilot like an hour ago.
Right.
It still looked great. I was like, wow, that ship looks so detailed. Mm-hmm. Looks so good.
Yeah, it just looked and felt like a ship and something that you were happy and wanted to see. I've shared the story before. I had the die cast where the saucer section in the battle bridge, you know,
I've
where it's separated. Yeah, it's I don't have it anymore, unfortunately. Yeah. And I know where it is. Well, I know where it was, but the idea that the ship could
crash on Viridian 3.
Sure.
You let Deanna Troi drive it.
I did. it's just like, I don't know. Just every episode, it's like, man, like, I mean, I remember sitting in like fourth grade class, just like drawing the Enterprise over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I used to take and like before I got the toy,
right?
I would like make off with like a roll of aluminum foil,
okay,
and make my own out of foil, you know. So yeah, I mean, this show definitely had a huge impact on me, and you know, kept me interested and in love with the genre. And you know, that's again why I was so excited to see that it held up the way it did.
Right. Yeah, it definitely holds up. It's definitely one of those ones where you can just turn it on, and if you're doing something, you can sit there and know when you need to watch and when you don't need to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Like David said, there's a lot of, you know, because it was 25 to 26 episodes a season, there's a lot of hits and misses there. But when it hit hard. And that story-wise, I mean, you know, even like there are a few episodes in the second season. I do call that the worst season of Next Gen.
Mm-hmm.
But there's the episode where the Borg first appear.
Right.
Where Q tells them, you're not ready for what's out here, you know. And that even though they've been exploring for a couple hundred years, it's like, you know, Q's finally decided because they've gotten far enough out, you know, you're not ready for what you're going to encounter. And shows them the Borg, and it's like definitely that episode is a catalyst for a lot of stuff that happens, you know, later on.
Yeah,
there's an episode that I personally like, you know, and it's one of those things where it's a personal episode for Riker, where his father comes on board, and you get to realize that it's not so perfect in the future either,
right?
You know, because the relationship is very strained with his father. And you know, you get to see that. And I'm trying to think. There's
Riker has a lot of strained relationships.
Right. I think because of, you know, they wrote that character as, you know, not having a mother who had died when he was very young. Mm-hmm. Father was an ambassador pretty much. And, you know, he was left alone a lot grew up in Alaska, mm-hmm. and just Starfleet's his family.
Yeah.
I mean, being in Starfleet's been his family, and that, and then like I was telling Brian, I forgot to put it on the list, but the episode, it's like, I think in season 6 or 7, where he finds out that a transporter accident split him in half, right. pretty much. And he mm-hmm. meets himself, and it's the road not taken, pretty mm-hmm. much. Because, you know, when we first introduced to Riker, we find out that he had a relationship with Deanna Troi.
Right.
As a younger lieutenant. Mm-hmm. And then when this episode happened, you found out that the reason why he went a different direction and didn't stay with Deanna Troi was because that part of him was left on a planet for right. 8 years.
Right.
And it's like, oh, wow. It's like the possibilities, mm-hmm. you know, that happen. And then, you know, the way they explain things on this show with characters and do different things than they did on the original series. Right. And just went in their own direction.
I wanted to ask you guys too, real quick. Sorry guys, just to interrupt.
You're okay.
Just the fact that there aren't really any good, not that there aren't any good sci-fi shows, which, I mean, there are, there's some out there, but there's not a lot of the ones that have the space exploration aspect to them.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's why I love the intro to the older series, the original Next Generation, about, you know, boldly going where no one's gone before and right. exploring new worlds. And like, you know, when Farpoint ends, you know, Picard's like, let's see what's out there. They just go into warp. I mean, there's really no shows about space exploration anymore. It's all like, I mean, even Battlestar, which is one of my favorite shows of all time, you know, it's a political, theological, like, kind of drama. Like, it's serious. It doesn't really have much to do with, like, right. you know, exploring the galaxy. It was definitely
a run and hide type
more,
of a thing.
Yeah, it's a survival one, yeah.
More of the shows now just beat you over the head with it. Star mm-hmm. Trek, Star Trek The Next Generation, like we said last week, they don't really right. beat you over the head with it. It's just, right. you know, there are storylines where it's like you pretty much are getting a lesson of the day.
Right.
Right.
And the funny thing is, with Star Trek, I always, you know, and when I do TV talk for Collider, we usually pick on shows that are procedural. We're like, mm-hmm. oh, they solved it.
Right.
You know, Next Generation, for the most part, is a procedural. Like, every episode is pretty much self-contained. Like, there's not a really lot of continuing storylines, but they were still really well done, those standalone episodes. They're really well done.
The beauty is, though, is, like, yeah, they were kind of standalone, but, like, they didn't always solve it.
Well, yeah.
Like, we were talking about...
No, that's true. That's true.
We had to run a little errand before we recorded, and we were talking about the episode from season 7, Lower Decks. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Lower Decks.
Which is one of my favorites.
And one of the best.
It's absolutely, like, drama-wise, where it focuses on a group of 4 ensigns.
Yeah.
A medical officer, a security officer,
yeah,
an ops officer, and an engineer
right.
who happens to be Vulcan, right. who just did not have the right voice to be a Vulcan.
Like, well, he
played it.
He shows up again on Voyager, but as a different character. Yep. That is a Vulcan also.
Right. But his voice just kind of took me out. Like, he wasn't very logical.
Yeah, so it was a human that was on the bridge,
mm-hmm.
Sam Lavelle.
Right.
And then Cito Jaxa, mm-hmm. who had shown up in a previous episode when Wesley and his group had been penalized mm-hmm. for lying at right. Starfleet Academy. And then there was Nurse Ogawa, who had been on the show as a recurring character.
And she shows up in the movies, too.
Yeah. And then, what was his name? Vorik?
Yeah.
Yeah, Vorik. And then Ben, who is a server in the 10 Forward. He just
works in 10 Forward.
So
fleeces everyone at poker, apparently.
Yeah. Well, yeah. he goes back and forth between them and that. But it was one of those episodes where it's like, you get a different point of view of the main cast because mm-hmm. you're focusing on these people who don't know them as well as we know
right.
them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it was like, it was really well done because of that fact. But one of them pretty much is dead at the end
mm-hmm.
and they never resolved that storyline.
No, never.
Like, they never like went back to that at all.
It's just, you know, she or they, whatever she has died on a mission.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. you have to move on when you're that far right. out. Like, you don't have time to sit and pout.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, like it's like that level, and it's like, man, like there were plenty of shows, like plenty of episodes that right. that hit home like that.
Yeah. I mean, then there's the ones where Brian was like, you know, you put a lot of Worf episodes mm-hmm. on the And it's like Worf's story is epic throughout series. I mean, if anything, he's the one that keeps a continuing story going, because it's literally, you know, second season, you meet his girlfriend from the past, you know, third season, you find out that his father might have been a traitor to the Klingon Empire. And by the fourth season, you know, he's pushing a civil war, pretty much. He's part of what's to come with a civil war between the Klingons.
And then his brother was played by Pauly Sorvino. I mean, come on.
His human brother. And his Klingon brother was Tony Todd. It's like, dude, you know, they cast the right people for Michael Dorn to play off of, for sure.
Dave, you were going to say something.
And then, too, like, there's another, I mean, just, and then, of course, all the awesome guest characters they had come on. Like, I mean, I keep forgetting how old she is, even though she looks really good, as Femke Janssen came on. She was, like, in her early 20s at that point. I was surprised she was out. I'm like, wait, how old is she? I think she's almost 50 now. But
Ashley Judd.
Yeah, she was in there. Ashley Judd was there.
Two episodes with Ashley Judd.
Like, how upsetting is it that Will Wheaton got to, like, kind of just chill and make out with Ashley Judd a little bit? It's like, Will Wheaton? Really? Will Wheaton?
He's a pimp.
Like, he's not on my Grunberg level, but, like, he's definitely up there, you know, where it's like, Will Wheaton, come on, man. No, I'm kidding.
And too, I love how the show wasn't afraid, you know, just to embrace its sci-fi roots. Like, it could be trippy. Like, remember the episode, like, with the Dyson Sphere? I think that's the one that Scotty comes back on. Like, that's crazy. That's a really trippy, because I'm like a Dyson Sphere. I remember when I first saw that as a kid, I'd like look that up and see what that actually is. And
Is that real?
Did you go to the library and get the encyclopedia?
Well, yeah, at that time I would have. Yeah, I couldn't have, I couldn't Google it back then. That's true. Back in the day, I couldn't Google it then.
You might have been able to do Alta Vista at that point.
Well, and we talked about that technology-wise. Is we talked about Star Trek affecting technology.
I mean, just look in this room and you
look
see
at Next Generation, and you're like, everything that we have is Next Generation. Yeah. Like, you know.
Our phones are the tricorders. Our tablets are the
pads. I'm standing in Target sometimes by the screens and wishing I could just push it and like stuff would happen. And it's like, you know, when's that happening?
Yeah.
And but yeah, I mean, you know,
because didn't Picard have kind of like an iPad that he would use for things?
The pad, P-A-D-D. Like, I mean, my watch face on my Pebble is the readout.
Well, they've talked about like the L-Cars thing that is the technology that may be real in the next few years and be more like adaptive than a lot of the things that are being used now.
Yeah. So
talking about technology and, you know, apologies for a little bit of static. Yeah.
Talking about technology.
we're having some robot issues.
Yeah. Damn Elliot.
Mr. Data's not fully functioning right now.
No kidding. He was essentially...
Yeah, it was crazy, too, because I've been watching the movies and then watching Data without his emotion chip.
Yeah.
You know, it actually, sometimes I almost prefer him without it. Like, I like how he's learning.
He's a much more interesting character when he's learning.
Yeah, I actually almost prefer him without it. I think, especially, like, in Generations, he relied, like, the writer relied on it too much, and it was too much of a gag, and
just kind
of kept going.
It just became a crutch. It was a storytelling crutch.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there was episodes of Next Gen that used it as a story crutch, too. Yeah. So, you know.
I don't know. You know, one thing that you didn't put any on here was Lore.
Yeah.
Data's brother. And so, like, I guess that's kind of one of the big, like, overwhelming, like, themes of the show is family. And the different sides and shades of family. So, like, you had Deanna with her mom, right?
Her mother, who Lwaxana.
Who was the, you know...
Majel Barrett.
The voice of the computer.
Yeah.
But also...
And the wife of Gene
Roddenberry. But she was also the
Nurse Chapel on the original series.
Yeah, she was the sexpot cougar lady who was always, like, kind of horny, you know?
Yeah.
She was like Blanche from Golden Girls.
You gotta have sex bots.
Yeah.
By the end of the series, you find out that it's a lot of show because, you know, they reveal about them losing a child before Deanna.
Right.
And that, so... I mean, she's a fun character. I mean, like I said, Riker's dad came on. Worf's whole family thing with, you know, dealing with his father's death and what had happened, you know, with that whole thing. And then, you know, his adoptive parents showing up and being
Russian Jews, no less. Russian Jews. Russian it was so Jews perfect, and loved, I loved it.
Loved him.
Yeah, I mean, more than anything.
Truly, like, Theodore Bakel plays his adoptive father, but I can't remember who played his mother. But it was one of those things where those two actors, like, were so loving to him that it was like, man, it's like they played that to the T. And then Picard's family showing up.
Well, and him going back to his family after the whole Locutus of Borg incident.
Yeah.
But no, we didn't talk about lore. And like, you know, Dr. Soon, who was Data's
who showed up too.
Father, who shows up. Mm-hmm. Who, you know,
because lore, they didn't do enough with him that it was like one of those things where, I mean, as good as First Contact is with the villain, you know, that they had in that, which obviously was the Borg, they could have used lore as a villain anytime. And instead, did that B4 shit in Nemesis. Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, Nemesis was awful.
Yeah. Like, Nemesis was just a, you know, thrown together ramshackle piece of.
It wasn't Final Frontier awful.
No.
But it was bad. Really, really bad. It made me say it.
Yeah. Because it was so bad.
I didn't mean to rhyme there. But no, I mean, there's just so much that this show did right that you can overlook a lot.
You watched a lot.
Yeah.
David, you remember enough, right?
Yeah, yeah,
Do you
sure.
have, like, favorite episodes?
Oh, absolutely.
So, like, give me, like, two or three.
Well, the one where Q gave Riker the powers.
Okay.
I love that one.
Right.
Because one, those creatures.
Here's my nerd card. That's called Hide and Q first season.
The creatures with the bayonets terrified me.
Yeah.
Right? I had nightmares about those things for years.
Especially when they take Worf out and then Wesley.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. In the stabbing.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The.
Yeah, you know, that one. The. Where is it? The chain of command when the other captain comes in, Jellicoe, who was
Ronnie Cox from RoboCop.
Exactly. And you know, I kept I keep waiting for him to yell like some OCP rhetoric.
Yeah.
But no, that was a great
literally
one.
He comes on. He pretty much fires Riker, puts Data in a red shirt.
Yeah.
So he's a commander, makes Deanna get out of those dresses she was in and start wearing a uniform.
Bastard. So, we'll talk about Deanna's thing in a second, but, you know, the Pegasus episode with, Terry Quinn.
Yeah. Terry Quinn
was great. Definitely a favorite. Like, I like the Riker episodes. I really did.
Okay.
Cause he was probably like thinking back, he was definitely my favorite as a kid.
Okay.
Looking back, he's still up there. Worf holds a much greater place in my heart now. Not just for Next Generation, but for Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
And more so for Deep Space Nine. But, you know,
the Worf episode that, like, made him my favorite character was actually one of the, like, bad episodes of season two, where he went through the Age of Ascension.
Right.
Where he literally walked and was jabbed with those pain sticks. And it was, like, just the way Dorn played it and the way that, you know, he, like, was pronouncing things as he's getting stabbed.
Yeah.
I was like, man, this dude is bad.
Yeah.
It's like, he is the badass of this shit.
He is awesome.
Well, just like when Tasha dies and Picard's just like, Worf, you're security chief now. It's like, why didn't somebody think of this in the first place?
Yeah.
Why wasn't the Klingon the security chief?
Yeah, I don't know.
I always like how Worf, his makeup and his hair changes. Like, when I saw him in season the premiere, I'm like, oh, man, he looks so different.
Yeah. Well, his hair.
Makeup changes.
So he's like a Dothraki in a way, right? Like, his hair keeps getting to grow until he loses a battle. And he hasn't lost any. He doesn't lose any battles,
like, literally,
really.
By the end, he's got the ponytail.
The big old ponytail.
Like, holy moly.
The game was a good one with Ashley Judd.
Yeah.
Lower Decks.
Yeah,
Wesley
had stronger episodes when he was a guest star than when he was a regular.
Well, when he was a regular, he was that.
He was a crutch.
He was the Kitty Pryde, like, you know. And I'm going to go back to X-Men because I always bring everything back to X-Men. He was that Kitty Pryde point of entry character who all us little 10-year-olds were like, wait a second, I could pilot the Enterprise.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's like, wait a minute. He flies that ship and he's only a little older than me?
Yeah. Screw him. He gets to fly the Enterprise.
Well, I mean, as he got older and they developed the character more, the stories got better.
Sending him off to the Academy was the best thing that they could do for that character. I'm sure Will Wheaton hated it because he didn't get a regular paycheck.
Oh, no, I think that he was very happy with that. Because I think that at a certain point, he didn't want to be on the show either.
Okay.
I really do feel that, like, he was growing up and just at a certain point when you're a teenager, it's like, I don't want to do this. You know, I want to do something else. And I think he's said something to that point at certain times. And that, I mean, he, his character, like I said, when he left, his last episode was one of the best Wesley Crusher episodes ever. And then the episodes he came back, every one of them was a very strong.
Right.
Like they I think.
They capitalized.
They realized how to write the character as growing older.
Right.
And that, so, you know, it was one of those things where having kids on that ship. Mm-hmm. Help some stories,
right?
Because there was the episode called Disaster where Picard gets trapped with three kids, and it shows a different side of Picard, a side that you hadn't seen because Picard really didn't like kids that much.
No children and on
that,
the bridge.
Yeah, that, I thought that was kind of a cool thing too, that they actually had kids. They had schools because the ship was so much bigger.
Yeah,
you know, they actually had like kids, and like in the first episode, the premiere, you know, he asked Riker like help him because he knows that he's bad with kids. He doesn't work well with kids.
Right.
Well, in the Chain of Command, they had Captain Picard Day.
Yeah.
Which is just one of the best parts of that, where he's got to pick out the three winners and four honorable mentions of all this artwork that the kids made for him.
Yeah.
And one of the kids made a doll, and Riker tries to make off with it.
The Jean-Luc Picard.
And
make
and,
it so.
And he totally gets Riker back by saying, well, I made a Commander Riker Day for next month. Yeah. So
you're in the hot seat now, buddy. Like, I think that they missed out on was more the interaction of what happens every day on that ship. like we said, Lower Decks is a really good episode to see that. I think there's an episode called Data's Day where it's the episode that literally is him doing the logs for the entire episode. And there is the drama that's happening with the Romulans.
Right.
But you're getting to see things that are happening on the ship, you know, continuously throughout it.
Right.
So it's a thing where I think they did miss the boat on doing more like interpersonal stories with what happens on the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And that obviously, you know, that would have got boring continuously, but doing like they did Lower Decks and Data's Day and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Doing one or two a season, I think would have made, you know, us more attached to the other people on the ship.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So, I mean, but, you know, I think that's where they learned that and then did it on Deep Space Nine and Voyager for a certain amount. You know, Voyager didn't have families or anything, but they were more an interpersonal.
Yeah. They had those relationships that they focused on. But yeah,
I mean, the relationships between the main cast, you know, still to this day. Yeah. Still to this day, the main cast, the Next Generation, it's like you could tell them, hey, we're bringing it back. And they all would be there. Because they are like a family. I mean,
except for Denise Crosby.
Yeah, she would come back too.
Well,
I mean,
I know, I'm kidding.
She would be the villain of the.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
You know,
she didn't really die.
Well, I mean, the Sela thing.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, the, you know, coming on as her daughter, which that happened during the.
That is another one of my favorites.
Yeah.
A young Shooter McGavin. A young Shooter McGavin. It's like, wow.
Yeah, the yesterday's Enterprise episode and then bringing her back as her daughter, like using that storyline and going, hey, wait, we can do this. And the best part of it is they knew before the season finale because she appears like earlier in the shadows.
Right.
And it's like, you're like, wait a minute, who is that? That sound, that voice was like familiar. And it's like they're reprogramming Geordi to be an assassin,
right?
Like the Manchurian candidate on the Enterprise. And that, you know, it was one of those things when she appears at the end of that two-parter where the Klingons go to war. It's like, okay, what's going on here? And then when she explains, like, you know, that her mother was from that alternate timeline, it's like, okay.
She survived.
Wow.
And, yeah.
Yeah, it's really an interesting thing, like, on the scale of Star Trek doing the what ifs and that type of stuff, because they did a lot of the alternate universe type stuff throughout the series.
You know, looking back, I wish they would have done a mirror episode, a mirror universe.
I think that
I understand why they didn't, but like that, but I kind of wish they would have.
It was just one of those things where after season two, when Gene had pretty much like become just an executive consultant in that, I think Rick Berman, Brandon Braga, and Ron Moore were like had the initiative, and Ira Stephen Bear, he was another one, had the initiative to not do sequels to the original series.
No, and like I said, I understand why they didn't. It would have been something that I think, especially that group creatively, could have killed it.
I mean, at this point, there's like novels that, you know, use those characters in mirror universe situations, and it's interesting to see what they do. But yeah, seeing a mirror universe 1701D would have been interesting.
Would have been really interesting.
Yeah, seeing a bloodthirsty Picard would have been interesting. So I mean, you kind of get that with yesterday's Enterprise.
Yeah, because it's a,
you know, they've been at war with the Klingons for 20 years.
But that's the what if, you know.
I mean, Riker and Picard are not friendly to each other in that episode at all, and everybody dies by the end.
Yeah.
So the only thing they missed out on that was Worf should have been the Klingon commander of the fleet that attacked
absolutely. Yeah. So, Dave, what were some of your favorites that you remember?
I mean, yeah, like I like the Inner Light season five when Picard goes in the probe. You know, it's just a really good acting. I was just doing some research. I didn't realize that was actually that won a Hugo Award and was nominated for an Emmy.
For that
episode. I had no idea.
It's
just really good acting for me. Just because, again, I've never read like the expanded universe, and I've never read the books or read the comics, so I know episodes with the Romulans are always interesting because I just don't know much. I feel like they don't talk about them a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So like the Redemption episodes, and then what was the other one? The Neutral Zone.
Yeah.
You get some of the Romulans in that one. That's in season one. Like, I just feel like I don't know a lot about the Romulans, so I thought that was kind of interesting.
And the best thing too is talking about the Romulans. This is the first time we ever got to see them.
Well, I mean, see them as a culture,
right?
And that, because I mean, I think what two episodes of the original series had Romulans in them,
right?
But to see them as a culture, to go to Romulus when Spock comes on,
unification was a good one.
You actually get to see that the Romulans aren't as all cooperative as you would think they were,
right?
Because they always seem like the race where it was like we're all working together for the purpose of taking over, and it's like, not really, you know. Some people weren't happy with that because, you know, their origins do tie to the Vulcans and that. So it was one of those things where it was cool to see them do that. And then to introduce the Cardassians, you know, later on.
I always liked the Cardassians because the Cardassians you got a lot of in Deep Space Nine, which I appreciate. I really like the Cardassians.
Yeah, so it was one of those things where to introduce new, you know, quote-unquote villain alien races and that. I mean, they wanted the Ferengi to be like a villain race, but the Ferengi just came off as too comical.
They were more like they were antagonistic, but they weren't bad guys.
Yeah, and then, they were just greedy. You know, they were just so. You know, it's like going from what they were at the beginning. Like you see an evolution of that race to, you know, being scary and maybe eating people the way they threatened Groppler Zorn in the first episode. It's like, you know, maybe they'll eat you. And then when they show up and you're like, these big eared things are going to just like not really hurt anybody.
I feel like they should have been bigger in stature. Well,
if they would have cast those and if they would have cast Ferengi as like basketball player size guys that towered over everybody, it would have been a whole different race. But for them, they cast, you know, shorter actors, put the big ears on them.
Like Wookiees versus Ewoks, perhaps.
So, but I mean, you know, by the end of the series, the Ferengi had developed into a different kind of species that was like more useful to the story than, you know.
Well, and especially because it's a time where money's not important, right? Like,
to the Socialist Federation.
Right. Everything has its place, and there is a place for everything.
Right.
Right. And the Ferengi were the ones who were like, well, if you want that,
you got to cost you
like,
money.
You know, they were like red in the prison yard in Shawshank. Like, I can get you anything.
Yep. So. Well, and it literally was. It's like, you know, Picard says, you know, we don't use money.
Right.
But the Federation doesn't use money. They just, you know, go where they have to go and service the people they have to service.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is funny because remember, like in the pilot, like I think is it Dr. Crusher, she gets a piece of fabric and says, you know, bill it to, charge it to whatever. Right. And I'm like, well, who's paying for that? Yeah. Like, charge it to what? What? We have a credit card? Like,
I always figured like that they still got paid.
Yeah.
Like they got some kind of pay, but it was one of those things where it wasn't like, you know, they were financially not able to take care of themselves.
Yeah.
Like the whole Federation could take care of themselves because, you know, they were paying out, but they always had money coming in type thing.
I always looked at it as they were essentially indentured servants to the Federation.
Well, if you joined the military, it's like Starship Troopers kind of thing where, you know, you join the military for citizenship.
I'm from Brain Series and I say kill them all. Sorry. Anyway. Okay. So Deanna Troi, right?
Okay.
The first episode, she's in that little short skirt that's like the uniform.
Yeah.
Which is my
favorite. There was also a guy walking around in a short skirt.
There was.
Too.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
What was that?
But that's my favorite outfit of hers. Okay. Right. But then, like, she did the gray spandex jumpsuit because they were all in spandex that season with the purple thing.
Yeah.
That was kind of low cut.
Yeah.
Like, but then she got that little like blue like asymmetrical thing that was like way low cut.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it just kept going lower and lower and lower, and then they just pulled it all back.
Well,
you know?
And I think that was her saying, you know, hey, could I just wear a uniform?
So, but there's and I have to find it. I forget where it was. I saw it on Facebook the other day. There was actually a thing about like her cleavage.
Yeah.
It was hilarious. So
yeah, I mean, they did what you said they would have done with Tasha with her, where she was the, you know, sexualized character of the series because she always was in a relationship with somebody.
Oh yeah.
And you know, I mean, what she was with Riker, but wasn't with Riker.
Too much of her story.
Yeah.
Too much of her story was driven by what the male counterparts were doing. Whereas like you had Dr. Crusher on the other hand, who they didn't really play up any kind of like sexual tension or thing until the very end of the series.
Yeah.
Jean-Luc.
Yeah. Where they finally admit to each other, you know, we have feelings.
Yeah. Because like that first meeting between Jean-Luc and Dr. Crusher and Will Wheaton, like it's a little awkward. You can tell there's something there, but like, and it's not, it has more to do with like, just like, hey, you know, I brought your dead father, you know, to your mom. Like there's something else there in that history.
The
like,
way they did that history was that Picard and Jack Crusher were best friends.
Right.
And
they
served on the Stargazer together. And eventually when Picard became the captain, Jack was the first officer and died on a mission. And it was one of those things where, I mean, it's that Rhodes not taken thing where Picard had feelings for Beverly. Jack was his best friend. And obviously Jack loved Beverly and Picard just got out of the way. And Picard, because Picard is Picard, you know, he was more in love with his career than
Make
he was,
it so.
You know, it was the whole thing where, and I mean, you know, it's throughout the series that Picard, his career is everything until, you know, the Locutus incident.
Right.
And then it's like, you know, you see a different Picard at the point of the third season because Picard's starting to relax and have fun. I mean, Captain's Holiday, when he has the adventure with Bosh on Risa, and it's like, you know, when she comes back and Q puts them into the Robin Hood story.
Yeah.
And it's like,
that
you know,
was funny.
The best line of Star Trek, I am not a merry man.
So, all right. So just kind of, we're getting up on the hour here.
Sure.
So, like all in, I definitely think this is, again, a creative peak for Star Trek.
Yeah.
Like things have been good because of this.
Yeah.
Because of Next Gen. We got, you know, I mean, we have Patrick Stewart in our life now, thanks to Next Gen. Like he had done stuff and you can go back and you can see him as a bad guy in different things. And, you know,
Gurney Halleck.
Yep. Yeah. In Dune.
Yep.
So, but, you know,
the only things I had seen him in was that
I'd only
Excalibur.
Ever seen him in Dune. Yeah. I didn't see Excalibur until I was in high school.
Yeah.
But so we had that and then, you know, just the different kind of storytelling and the actual, like, kind of what Dave was talking about before, like the space exploration and, like, really getting to see that. But, like, just good storytelling.
Yeah,
for the first time, it was just good storytelling that went hand in hand in sci-fi. And, like, you can see where more where he took it with Battlestar.
Yeah.
Like, Battlestar could have happened anywhere.
Yeah.
It just happened to be on spaceships.
Right.
And I feel like there's parts of Star Trek The Next Generation that follow that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But definitely. At the same time, the thing that's important is to boldly go where no one has gone before.
Right.
And,
right.
And so I think that's what I take away from it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm interested in what you guys think.
I'm going to mention, because, you know, we've mentioned writers and we've mentioned that stuff. Michael Westmore, makeup on this show.
Oh, yeah.
Like, was some of the, like, best makeup
for,
like,
TV in the alien, 80s and 90s.
Yeah, the budget that show had, and that it's like some of those alien designs and that he made into real things, mm-hmm. are just, you know, just
and
awesome.
Some of it was like the Bajoran, right?
Yeah.
It was so subtle, but it was still very distinctive.
Right, yeah.
So anyway. Yeah. Good one.
David, how do you feel about Star
Trek? Oh, yeah. I mean, I thought it was a great series. I'm kind of with Brian. I think Deep Space Nine is probably my favorite,
right.
But I feel like, I don't know. I feel like maybe this series might be the most memorable, though. It's the one I think about the most.
Oh,
I haven't done as many rewatches or seen as many episodes a second time of Deep Space Nine as I had of Next Generation.
Well,
so
it's because Deep Space Nine becomes serialized, mm-hmm. you know, after the Dominion is introduced in that, which I think helped that show. But mm-hmm. it's one of those things where, when you watch Deep Space Nine, you literally are going to watch Deep Space Nine from the beginning to the end. Where Next Gen, you can just go, I want to watch yesterday's Enterprise. Mm-hmm. You just turn it on and watch it, and that's all you have to watch. And then it's like, if you want to go and watch more, you can. Mm-hmm. Or you can just do what I do, where I turn one episode on and just let it play.
I turn one episode on, and then the next thing I know, it's five episodes.
I'm like, wait a minute, what? Where, you know, did I fall through a wormhole?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. Like, I'd always consider myself more of, you know, and talk about this, more of a Star Wars fan. But I feel like because there's been so much Star Trek, I mean, what, 14 seasons, 17, you know,
it's
what, like over,
like over
how many episodes?
50 episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, between Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, and Voyager, I mean, that's 21 seasons of television. I mean, you have so much. Plus, you have 13 movies now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, you know, as much as I love Star Wars, I mean, I've read the books and everything, but it's like you have, you know, seven films compared.
One of those things where, and I've had conversations with other people too, it's one of those things where as a kid, Star Wars is the thing,
mm-hmm.
and as an adult, you get exposed to Star Trek, and you're like, oh wait, there's more to science fiction than just this action adventure stuff with Star Wars.
Right.
It's like, you know,
yeah.
And I think that, you know, in all honesty, that's why Clone Wars and Rebels are so good, because I think that they took a page from the idea of what Next Generation and Deep Space Nine,
mm-hmm.
mainly, did.
Yeah.
I do. I think that it's all, you know, it's one big circle of, mm-hmm. you know, sci-fi life. But, you know, it's one of those things where as a kid, I loved Star Wars. And as a teenager, I loved Star Trek.
Yeah.
And as an adult, I love them both.
So
yeah.
Mm-hmm. With Discovery coming out, right?
Yeah.
This is why it bothers me that they're not following this. They're not moving. Yeah. Like going back, like. We had that with Enterprise, right?
Yeah.
I love Enterprise. Like, I'm very, very fond of Enterprise.
I don't understand the idea.
I don't get
the idea of telling the history of the Federation. It's like, we don't need much more teaching of the Federation or, you know, anything to do with the Romulan War or the Klingon War.
Yeah.
I mean, mm-hmm. to go, the idea is, like Next Generation, let's see what's out there. Let's see more of exploration. Let's see more, but it's a reflective of the society we live in now. We dwell on the past a lot more
too
than
much.
We look forward to things. And, you know, that's why I always say, you know, I'd like to see us go back to the moon in my lifetime.
Yeah.
And I'd much rather see us
go to Mars.
Yeah. Well, we got to go to the moon before we go to Mars.
Yeah.
I really do feel like we have to go back to the moon before we go to Mars.
Yeah.
And that, but I would just like to see us get off this planet and do something. And, you know, that's the thing with Star Trek is it's like doing stuff where you're going to the, you know, going out and exploring instead of exploring the past is one of those things that I think that they should look at, not what they're doing right now. Cool. Hopefully Discovery's good. You know, I hope it's good, but it's one of those things where it's dwelling on the past.
I'm going to wait until it's done and then borrow David's CBS All Access.
No, it's not going to happen. I'm going to charge you for it, man. It can only be like $40-50 by the time over.
Yeah, I'll give you
$2 an episode. How much
See, that's the thing. Like, I wonder if they're going to put it on iTunes afterwards. Like, you know, you can like buy per episode, or is CBS going to block it?
Sony never put out Powers on iTunes.
That's true.
So,
yeah.
So I mean, you can buy it CBS from the PlayStation store, but
yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there's other means to watch it, but
they'll put it out on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
They would make a mistake not to put it out.
When
on
Johnny
Blu-ray.
Gets the Blu-rays, I'll borrow this.
Yeah, that'll be
because like you, I don't watch anything on CBS.
Right.
So. Well, you do. David and I don't.
The only thing I was watching on CBS was Supergirl.
You watch Y5O?
Oh, yeah. I forget that's on CBS.
Yeah.
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 Angel watches The Big Bang.
So the only thing I watch on CBS is the only good show on there
on
right now. I'm sorry, but I got lost by the procedurals of NCIS and that. So, you know, at least Hawaii Five-O's action adventure procedural.
Yep. So, all right. So, Dave, any last words?
No, just watch more Star Trek. You know, get back into it. If you're listening to this and you haven't seen an episode in a while, or maybe you never have, I would suggest to just dive right in. I don't know. It's hard to tell. I mean, Johnny, would you tell somebody who's never seen it, would you say start with the original series? Would you go back that far? Or would you say start with Next Generation?
Anybody nowadays, I would say watch Next Generation and then go back and watch the original series.
I would say Next Gen, then probably Enterprise. Just because...
No.
Enterprise is considered the weakest, isn't it? I mean, of all of them?
See, in my opinion...
See, I think Voyager is the weakest.
To get an idea of Voyager is probably the weakest in the first four seasons.
Okay.
I'll give you episodes.
Yeah, I didn't have UPN, so I didn't get to see a lot. And I've watched through, and I was like...
Right, there's a lot of feet dragging on that show.
Yeah.
But... if you're going to watch Next Generation for, you know, a sci-fi fan, Next Generation is a good way to introduce to Star Trek. And then go back and just, you know, there's enough. We've talked about it enough. And there's enough stuff out there on the internet, which I didn't have when I got into being a fan of this, that, you know, you can go and look and see what are the good episodes of the original series. What are the good episodes of the Next Generation?
Yeah.
The episodes that are on our list are some of the best episodes.
And those are all on the website.
Everything on there, but
So,
All
right. So, with that being said,
next
Dave,
Deep Space
Nine. Next week is DS9. Dave, where can we find
prepare
you again?
Prepare for a 2-hour podcast. Yeah.
where can everyone find you online, Dave?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at GriffinDE, as well as on Facebook. You know, if you want to watch our fun Collider TV talk show, that's every Monday on Collider Video on YouTube. I think they post it on the website on Collider.com as well. I think you can just search TV talk. Okay. You'll find it there.
I actually listen to it as an audio podcast.
You can listen as a podcast and go on iTunes or SoundCloud or however you listen to your podcast and find it there. Just go under Collider Video. Also, too, I'll be doing Star Wars Rebels reviews this season with Christian Harloff. I'm not sure if that's going to be on Collider or on Schmoes. No, but check my Twitter for more information about Star Wars Rebels reviews.
Awesome. Johnny?
Yeah.
I'm at Instagram and Twitter, Johnny Podorf. I'm on Facebook also. I'm trying to think if there's anywhere else I am. At work.
At work.
I'm at work.
You're at work. All right. And I'm Brian Tudor, and you can find me on most social networks.
Oh, and I'm at the Infamous Podcast.
Well, I was going to get there. So, most social networks at Brian Tudor, and we are the Infamous Podcast. You can find us infamouspodcast.com. Theinfamouspodcast.com will get you there too. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, Infamous Podcast. And if you have questions, concerns, comments, email us at contact@infamouspodcast.com. We would love to hear from you.
Yeah.
And then I guess the last thing, especially when David's on, give us 5-star reviews, because we have to get those kind of reviews to keep the media mogul that is David Griffin coming back to our
to keep me happy.
To make him like he needs to see the growth. He needs the impressions, the page views. Otherwise, we just don't do it for him
anymore. I didn't
bring
my knee boots. Getting high in here.
But anyway, that's super helpful because it helps us move up in the rankings and we can do more cool stuff.
And let us know if there's something you want to hear us talk about. Let us know if there's something you don't want to hear us talk about.
Yeah. So,
and I mean, so yeah,
Brian, tell everybody to start watching Farscape.
Yeah, start Farscape watching show. Farscape now.
Yeah.
Because next month, the three of us
are
going
to.
You're
do it next month?
Or? Yeah, well, you wanted to do
Damn
it.
Damn it,
so.
I have to go back and watch everything in a month.
Anyway, we'll do it at the end of the month.
I actually don't have to. I mean,
and then Dave will be back in November when Johnny's on vacation.
Yeah.
Too. Dave and I are gonna figure out something cool to do like we did with the 100. So,
still haven't listened to that episode.
Well, you haven't watched the 100.
That's true.
So,
yeah.
Anyway, all right, guys. Have a great day, night, evening, weekend, morning, whenever it is you're listening to this, and we will see you with a new episode next Friday.
Thanks for listening.
Later.